All right. Well, good afternoon, everybody. As always, you're listening to the ASSB Healthcare Practice Specialties Health Beat Podcast. I'm Corey Worden. I'm the administrator for the Healthcare Practice Specialty. So today we're on part six of our best practices among the different practice specialties and different industries. So we are excited. Today we're talking to a great group over at BISE, which is the Blacks in Safety Excellence. And they've got a fantastic group among themselves with different industries and different functional areas. So we're very excited about this conversation. As always, we'll be talking about the different types of hazards that we see. We'll be talking about the different best practices. We'll be talking about different safety-related issues such as wellness and mental health. And of course, we'll be talking about what's going on with ASSB and with BISE. So, short of me speaking for y'all, today we got Crystal and we got Tim from BISE. Crystal, if we can start with you, if you want to give us a quick introduction of yourself, your career, experiences, anything you want to tell our members, we appreciate it.
Yes, so I am Crystal Hodge, and I've worked in safety roughly 7 years now, and I currently work for a large manufacturing company here in Houston, Texas. And my job is just to primarily oversee several sites in the South and North region of the United States and kind of just push the company's safety program, do incident investigations, trainings, risk assessments, audits, you name it. I got into safety a few years back, and actually I attended the University of Houston. I majored in biology, and then I went to grad school, UT School of Public Health, where I concentrated in occupational health and environmental sciences. And that's kind of how I got my, my interest going as far as the field of safety. I'm currently the BISE administrator. And I also am the Vice President of Communications for the ASSP Gulf Coast Chapter here in Houston, Texas. So that's a little bit about myself.
That's fantastic. We appreciate you being here. And definitely. We have quite a few of our coworkers that came from the UT School of Public Health. So that's just great. That's awesome.
Nice. Great.
Yeah, it's a big, small world, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Yeah. Cool. Tim, how about yourself? You want to give a quick introduction, please?
Sure. My name is Tim Willis. I am the Director of Environmental Health, Safety, and Quality, as well as Risk Management for a minority construction company based out of Atlanta. We primarily cover the whole Southeast, so I wear a lot of hats. But ultimately, I've been in construction for 30 years as health and safety. I've pretty much have done a lot of environmental work, a lot of when I first stepped into this world out of the military, spent 10 years in the military, and that's kind of how I fumbled into safety. Spent 10 years, like I stated, as a nuclear biological chemical warfare specialist with special operation units, airborne ranger. So I dealt with the training aspect and the health and welfare protection of employees from the very beginning when it comes to the military and just protecting personnel. I went to school while in the military, and for those who have done it, I commend them, because that is a tough task to perform. I studied hazardous material management at Waubonsie Community College while I was in, and at the same time, Columbia Southern University, Occupational Health and Safety, and gained my bachelor's there. So kind of unconventional, but at the same time, I have a lot of real world experience, knowledge base. I'm also a certified herbalist as well. And that is me pretty much in a nutshell.
Well, that is outstanding. We appreciate you being here. It's always great to speak to fellow military. I was Air Force myself. I was in emergency management. So I was an instructor at the Air Force Emergency Management School. We were joint service with the Army Chemical Corps. So we were in the chemical defense training facility with y'all. And I huge respect, Airborne Ranger. That is outstanding, for real. So great. Appreciate your service.
Yours as well.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Definitely my pleasure. Looks like we had two others join us. Stephanie, how about yourself? You want to give a quick introduction? Okay. Well, I think she's muted for now. Stephen, are you there? Do you want to give a quick introduction?
Yes, I am here. So hello everyone, Stephen Guillory. I am currently the safety program manager for the city of Houston. Prior to that, I was the safety operations manager. And prior to that, safety supervisor and safety representative. Been with the city of Houston approximately 15 years. Prior to that, I was not practicing safety per se, but did my best being safe as a courier and dangerous goods specialist for FedEx. FedEx is where I got my insight into the safety profession. So once I graduated college, FedEx has a great tuition reimbursement program. Once I graduated college, got into the safety world. So that's my role to my current position. Currently a CSP, as well as an REM, and recently a CRM, Certified Risk Manager. I'm looking to broaden my horizon, so to speak. I don't want safety to be my last pit stop, so I'm looking at the larger picture of risk management and maybe insurance as a second career. Education-wise, I have two master's degrees, one from the University of Denver in Environmental Policy and Management, with a concentration with environmental health and safety. And that kind of led me to my second master's, which is from East Carolina University in occupational safety. I'm currently a dissertation candidate at Indiana University of Pennsylvania's Safety Sciences PhD program. I'm actually in the first cohort of that program. Classes are complete and I am finishing up my research, and I look to defend this time next month. So hopefully by the end of the year, I will have my PhD in safety sciences from IUP. So that's me in a nutshell.
Cool, outstanding. Yeah, definitely just a great, great prolific careers, a lot of different variety of functional areas and a lot of different experiences. So that's fantastic. So with that being said, you know, of course, working in different industries, working with different operations, there's a lot of different hazards that we see. So that's the first thing we always like to ask about is, what are the different types of hazards that y'all have seen the most and work with the most? Crystal, how about we start with you, please?
Yeah, so I can actually tell you about what's currently happening. So I work in smart energy in the field work. So I would say in comparison to past industries that I've worked in, I'm in manufacturing right now, it's a little different. So we have workers who basically exchange what's called smart meters. So we have a lot of electrical hazards, also a lot of environmental hazards. These workers are going to different residential and work areas, and they're doing this work. So they're coming in contact with environmental hazards like dogs and wasps and bees. And so these are things that you typically don't think about when it comes to manufacturing, but it's happening. We also have we do a lot of driving. So driver safety is big. Transportation, as far as hazards, are things that I would say are pretty big and something I see very, very often in this area of work.
And definitely, that sounds like a lot going on there. That's great. Not the hazards aren't great, but it's great that you manage all of that.
Yes. A lot going on, but you know, just have to be aware of the hazards that we see. And so, yeah.
Certainly, certainly. Yeah. Tim, how about yourself?
Well, you know, for me, it's pretty much the same, but, you know, on a different level. You know, construction is inherently dangerous anyway, and it's been that way for decades for you know, whatever reason. You know, but I, you know, I contribute that primarily to, you know, just I want to say there's a lot of, due to COVID, a lot of new personnel that are coming into this field who have no knowledge base about construction but need work. And so, you know, we're seeing a lot of the you know, younger personnel stepping into this industry, starting to perform work in this area, you know, and not having that knowledge base readily available provided to them in order for them to be successful. You know, I'm also seeing some of the hazards where, you know, you still have the older workers, which is also you know, a challenge as well. Construction trades, specialties, those areas are you know, slowly losing the professionalism and the specialty skills that come along with some of those trades that are special and unique. Trying to fill those boots, trying to get people into those areas. You know, there's an area where there's a large complacency potentially. You know, there's also the fear of companies losing revenue. So, you know, not investing into these newer workers that are stepping into the industry. So I see quite a bit of things of that come about within the construction industry that poses a hazard or a hazardous situation within my field. But, you know, the combination is really a large part due to the changes in our environment due to COVID, new personnel stepping into the construction industry, and at the same time, a loss of personnel within the workforce that have that complacency mindset, not willing to change some of their ways, so to speak. And so you're fighting for the minds, and you're also fighting for the hearts. And so that's primarily what I do on a daily basis, is fight for those hearts and minds, especially those our subcontractor partners and those company owners.
It definitely, yeah, it's a lot, you know, with the hazards themselves and the hazard controls, but then you've also got, like you were saying there, the culture change and those different cultural aspects, and then you've got the different situations, such as different levels of experience and different levels of maturity and whatnot. So yeah, absolutely, just keeping up with all that, that's fantastic that you can do that.
Cool.
I'm sorry, say again.
It is a juggle, yes.
Yes, sir. Yeah, that construction is certainly interesting. You know, there's so many moving parts. And then, of course, just by definition of the work, everything changes each day, you know, as something gets built or taken down. So it's very interesting to me. You know, it's within healthcare, we have construction when we build a new facility or if there's a renovation or whatnot. But when you all do that as your primary mission, you know, that's definitely a different type of thing. So that's great. All right. Stephen, how about yourself? What do you think?
So I'm employed by the city of Houston, and we have roughly 22,000 to 23,000 employees, not including contractors or temporary employees, 26 different departments doing 26 different things, whether it's construction, public works and engineering, who does a lot of construction, but also wastewater treatment, water purification. We have police officers, firefighters, parks and recreation, solid waste. So you name it, we do it. In fact, and I don't know if my data is correct, but the last time I checked, the city of Houston's employee count was the second largest in the nation, next to, if I'm not mistaken, Washington, D.C. So to give you an idea of the types of injuries and accidents we have, we see it all. You name it, we see it. Corey works in the health department for the city of Houston. And prior to that, he oversaw public works. So you name it, he saw it also. I would say, however, the one hazard that we have in the city of Houston that we are struggling to control, next to trips and falls, which is just innate to what we do, are the vehicle accidents. We have a lot of vehicle accidents. I wish I could share the data, but unfortunately I can't, but it is our number one cost driver, just on the injury side alone, as well as number one, as far as incident rate goes. That's not even including the property damage, the damage to the vehicles and the equipment. So that's how big of a deal vehicle accidents are in the city of Houston. Many of them are at fault, and many of them are not at our fault, but just people hitting us. A colleague from another municipality said that their city still is a target for inviting citizens and whatnot to hit us. So that, in my area, that's the big challenge, Corey, is, among all other things, vehicle accidents.
Certainly. Vehicle accidents or vehicle incidents are interesting in that, you know, it's interesting the way people look at vehicle operation. You know, I remember one time, it was about 2013, we were talking about risk assessments, and I had been speaking about, you know, frequency and severity, and somebody said, you know, they were being very serious. They said, well, if you look at it in that context, then what you're saying is that driving a car is high risk. And I said, well, yeah, absolutely. And they said, oh, no, it's not. I drive a car every day. I'm not worried about it. You know, and I said, well, you look at it. And I said, you drive a car every day, high frequency. There's a potential that you can get in a fatal car accident every day, high severity. I said, so by definition, vehicle operation is very high risk. And that's why a lot of organizations require things like defensive driving training and motor vehicle record reviews and, you know, all these pre-trip inspections. So it's interesting the way it gets the perceptions of it and the actual risk, and then the controls, you know, whether it's the safe condition of the vehicle or the safe driving practices or whatnot. And there's advances in vehicle safety, you know, every year. So it's very interesting. I noticed how that came up with both you and with Crystal. So having talked about the hazards, you know, of course, the next step on there is the ways that we deal with those hazards, you know, the best practices in hazard control. So we're always interested, you know, over the course of your career, what are some of the things that you've worked on that have been successful, some of the best practices, different programs, different specific controls, anything that you want to put out there for the group? Tim, we can start with you this time.
Yeah, you know, one of the things I try to do, and this is probably a little unorthodox, considering that being within a construction company, I make myself always available to our subcontractors and our partners and our clients. You know, that can be taxing, but you know, what I try to pass on to every person that I come in contact with, primarily our subcontractors, is that I am not just someone who puts policies in place. I'm not just someone who is telling them that this is the best way to go about it. I'm also walking it and living it. And I try to exemplify that by that first interaction with everyone who I come in contact with, whether on a project or within a meeting or what have you. Just walking the walk and talking the talk, and that's very important. I find that a lot of people, if you ask them, is your company or does this person really believe in what they say, they'll more likely say, no, they really don't. There's something that is going to be missed, or something that is not going to be followed through on by somebody. You know, that you'll always find one person that can point someone out. But ultimately, you know, I try to be that example for others to see that, yes, this can be done. without a loss of time, a loss of production, or what have you. And so making sure that others understand that is you know, the I guess the highlight of most of my days. You know, again, touching those hearts of those employees and those clients that I come in contact with. You know, some of the things that I've done, you know, when it comes to, you know, some of the safety practices is make sure that everyone understands why a policy or procedure is the way it is. You know, it's not something that is in place to hinder. And I think a lot of times most people think that, you know, things are written in a way of hindering them from performing their work or performing their activity or just living their lives. Everyone wants to be free to live a sovereign life, but there are some things that are in place to better your sovereignty of life. And those are the things that I try to help people with. So, you know, some of the best practices I put in place, like changing some of the PPE requirements. You know, we had at one point were utilizing the regular standard hard hats. And so, you know, I made a decision that, you know, it was in our best interest to change the way we utilize hard hats and wearing hard hats and educating people on hard hats. So we went from the regular hard hats to CAS about 3 years ago, and that has been the best thing since, you know, especially with, you know, the unthought about, you know, head traumas within construction. Also, we've also introduced a lot of the, you know, bringing in of you know, our subcontractor partners and clients to help them to understand, you know, why we've changed our policies. You know, it's one thing to change a policy or put something in place, but also to help others to see why those things are in place. And you get better buy-in when others are able to see exactly how it benefits them. And so, you know, there's always challenges when it comes to adding or putting things in place, especially policies and procedures. But ultimately, you know, I try to make myself always accessible to help others see that I don't just say what I'm saying, but I'm also walking the walk as well.
Yeah, definitely. That's great perspectives. Good for culture change. Yeah. Crystal, how about yourself? Any thoughts on that one?
Yeah, I think Tim did a very good job of covering that. He did say much of what I was going to also state. But I think it's true. You have to, with us, I know I take a team approach, right? So that's getting HSC, operations, the workers who are actually doing the work because they are the experts, right? Our clients and having engagement, you know, working together. Whenever we do build like job risk assessments, or we have our tail board meetings with the workers, we've had Kaizen projects that require us to all work as a team and kind of help to reduce incidents. And this has all worked because, as Tim stated, it all comes to building that trust, having them feel like they're involved, increasing engagement. So then when they do buy into safety, they're more likely to practice it, you know, in their job tasks. So I find that to be very effective. Just make sure they're engaged and involved. And it's not just, you know, me being in safety and shooting out all these policies on one side. I think you have to bring everyone in, and that's how you'll get a better outcome.
Absolutely. Yeah, the inclusion is always good. Inclusion and engagement, that's great. Cool. Yeah, if we're talking about best practices, you know, we've got these different hazard controls, and of course those range from, you know, the whole safety management system, everything from the engagement and the infrastructure and the actual controls themselves, and then the training and everything around that. One of the things that's interesting is that, you know, between private industry and then, of course, you've got some variances within public sector and government. But either way, you've got these overarching regulatory standards, and you've got these national consensus standards. And then, of course, you got recommendations and NIOSH and CDC and everything. So there's a lot going on there, you know, whether it's environmental regs such as the Resource Conservation Recovery Act and the CERCLA and the EPCRA, and then you've got your you got all your Code of Federal Regulations and everything in between. So what are y'all's thoughts about regulations and standards? Do you feel like those are effective, or do you feel like they're leaving much to be desired? What do you think about that?
So Corey, from a municipality, and I'm not sure if those listening to the call know this, but OSHA doesn't have any enforcement in the state of Texas, and many states, unless you have a state run OSHA, but they don't have any enforcement in municipalities. So one struggle with the city of Houston is we don't have that regulatory body to say, hey, this is what needs to be done. Are you going to be fined for it, quote unquote, fined for it? Unfortunately, a lot of our employees and management know this. So it makes our jobs as safety professionals even harder to enforce safety policies and procedures when they know that there's really no bite outside of our organization itself. That said, I believe if there was an OSHA aspect to my job personally, and we do adhere to OSHA to the point of we follow its regulations at a baseline. So that's the statement we use, and the that generally doesn't work. So I feel if we had more OSHA insight, or if we were had some OSHA enforcement, a lot of our injuries and the costs associated with those injuries would be reduced greatly. Conversely, if you look at EPA or in Texas case, Texas Commission of Environmental Quality, we, as a city of Houston as a whole, as an employer, we don't really have any issues with compliance because we know if we do wrong, they're going to fine us, they're going to hold us accountable. So just looking at both sides, because remember, I'm environmental by education and safety, I see that the regulations for environmental policy are keeping the city of Houston in check, whereas we really don't have that on the safety side, and it puts a lot of pressure on our leadership within to enforce safety. So that's my two cents on the compliance. I really believe in compliance. I do know they offer a baseline, but coming from a person who operates in a system that really doesn't have an enforcement eye on the safety side, it's a welcome addition to me.
Great perspective. Go ahead, please.
Okay. I know for me, because I do work in private industry, so OSHA's big. As far as, you know, making sure we're in compliance and meeting standards, and also when it comes to incident investigations, you know, following OSHA's standards to the T, I think it's good to have, because it kind of keeps us in line, especially when meeting deadlines when it comes to incident investigations, or making sure that things are accurately reported and how we capture our stuff. So I think that they are effective, I know, for my field of work.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, in the construction industry, OSHA obviously is the go-to for everything when it comes to compliance in the construction industry. And I think the construction has done a pretty good job with, you know, setting up projects that partner with OSHA. We actually, our company has a partnership with an OSHA cooperative in Atlanta with a joint venture. So the involvement with OSHA in the construction industry, I see a great deal of that. But you know, at the same time, I do think that the policies could be better. And what do I mean by that is that there are some standards that are in other countries that we could adopt, and there are some safety standards that we could adopt as well that would overall better our health and welfare across the board. Now, ultimately, you know, that is a definite disconnect. And so if we're concerned about the health and welfare of all those employees, regardless if they're, here in the United States or overseas, then we will look at those best practices in order to protect life. And so the OSHA standards have, from what I've seen, not just the OSHA standards, but even the EPA standards, you can kind of see somewhat of a disconnect even with the, some of the regulations that are coming up, where they're kind of overlapped another. And, it's like, okay, what do you follow? What is the best practice? And so I think there could be a little less, and this is just my thought. I probably some politics involved that create an environment where, certain areas of the country do not get the full dynamics of what would be in the best interest of all. And so I think that the standards are that we have are great, but they also could be better. Just my two cents.
That's great perspective. Yeah, it's interesting with regulations is that they provide that baseline fundamental level of safe conditions that gives us the opportunity to build on that, with continual improvement and safe work practices and everything that we do. So it's always interesting, to hear the different perspectives on how those are working out and the effectiveness of them. So great input. All right. Well, yeah, the last couple of things that we like to talk about here is that in addition to, working with different hazards and different controls and different programs, there's also a lot of these different factors that influence those things. Things like fatigue and burnout and mental health. And a lot of that has been, greatly exasperated, so to speak, especially in the last 20 months with this global pandemic. So what are your thoughts about wellness and about mental health and fatigue and all these different things that influence safety? And how do you feel about being able to positively influence those things?
So I'll go ahead and start on that one. So I'll tie it into my scholastic research. My research at IUP deals with total worker health, healthy employees, and how the health of an employee can or cannot affect your incident rate and the cost associated with those injury rate and cost associated with injuries, the frequency and severity. What I've come to find out, not going into detail, but a healthy employee is generally a safe employee. Those employees that are healthy, when you look at certain criteria like blood pressure, cholesterol, BMI, body weight, things of that nature, they tend to have less injuries than those with higher blood pressure, higher cholesterol, higher BMI. Keep in mind, my research started before COVID-19 was even a thing. So one of the things that COVID forced me to do in my research is to look at mental health, look at fatigue, and see how those things play a role in not only the health of an employee and the well-being, but safety. If you just think of it outside the box, if you're fatigued and you're driving, your chances of being in a vehicle incident or accident are higher than if you are fully rested. Of course, there's always that room for something happening, but if you're tired, you're generally going to be in worse shape driving than if you're not tired. So fatigue plays a part. Mental, I think everyone on this call can attest to it, that COVID has brought out the best and the worst of us mentally. I see myself as a mentally strong person, and there have been times where I've had to sit down and just reassess things to get my mind back on track. So yeah, I think right now, Corey, total worker health is a thing and it's going to be a big thing moving forward. I think I mentioned this in a previous conversation. Don't be surprised in the next 10, 15 years where we refer to safety as EHS or SHE or whatever. Don't be surprised if you see a W added in there for wellness. But now wellness is not just about blood pressure, cholesterol, BMI, body weight, but now it's about mental wellness. It's about fatigue. It's all encompassing. So that's my two cents on that.
Yeah, this is Tim. You know, Steve, I completely agree with you on that. What's funny is that one of the things that I have seen, and this is just from my years of life and knowledge base from even being on the herbalist and the nutritional side, is that seeing how people who have poor nutrition also are those more susceptible to getting hurt or injured on the job as well. The mental health, I think, plays a large overall with just about everyone on within any industry. You know, I once had a company commander tell me, he told me that when your mind's not right, the body's not right. And, you know, I was very profound by that statement at the time. But it was a very true statement, seeing how if you are mentally dealing with stressors or mentally dealing with things in life that cause your body to be inflamed, or put in a dis-ease state, then you will be more susceptible to getting hurt, being injured, being distracted on the job, putting yourself at risk. These are all items that will come about from the lack of nutrition, a lack of putting yourself in a good healthy stance. And I think this is one thing that I think the construction industry is starting to see, but you really don't know how to go about it yet. Especially when you're talking about, you know, throwing in, you know, healthy eating. I'm sure that for the most part, if we all were to go to one of our office parties, you probably won't find a lot of healthy item foods that are available. And so, you know, those are some of the things that I think that a lot of corporations are starting to, or not, I wouldn't say a lot, but there are some corporations that are starting to see that nutrition plays a part as well as the mental health portion. And again, having those personnel understand their limitations when it comes to sleep deprivation. And obviously, you know, I've experienced that in my life and career. But when you are put under stresses, your body is not able to perform the way it typically would under normal conditions. And so this is something that is going to eventually, like Steven said, it wouldn't surprise me if wellness is put on the end of EH and S or SH and E. And I know that some companies are starting to put that into play now. But yes, definitely nutrition and mental health plays a large factor.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, there's a lot of discussion as far as, you know, health and wellness and how that all relates to safety and everything that we do within the safety field. So that's great, great input. And I certainly agree with that. So the last thing that we always like to talk about here is, the last question we always bring up is if you had a magic wand. So if there's something that, if you could wave your magic wand and change something about safety or environmental management or emergency management or culture or situational awareness, you know, anything that you could just outright change and you had a magic wand to do it, what would that be? Crystal, how about yourself? What are your thoughts?
I think it would be, you know, everyone just as a whole, you know, making safety, like being more proactive, making it a priority. Because a lot of times I think we see, and even in history, that we don't try to change or become more safer until something bad happens, and then we're kind of reactive. So I think if I had a magic wand, then, you know, there are different companies, different organizations. I know some have stronger safety foundations than other, but I think for me, a magic wand as a whole is that, you know, safety would be a priority when it comes, even so comparing it to production, and it's just at the forefront of everything.
Great input, definitely. There seems to be a lot of trend with the culture change. You know, it would certainly be a good thing for sure. Stephen, how about yourself? What do you think?
So if I had a magic wand to wave, it would be to eliminate the politics in safety and focus more on taking care of the workforce, the employees. I know you all have heard the saying, if there's a Democratic president in office, safety is going to improve. And if you have a Republican president in office, they don't care about safety, and the monies aren't allocated towards safety. And a lot of that is true. I don't think it's that they don't care about employees, but it's politics being politics. And I don't think it should be a discussion on, hey, we should pass this law to protect employees, or, hey, I don't think for this term we should pass this law to take care of employees. So it's too much politics in safety at a high level, and I think it needs to be eliminated. So that's my magic wand moment, is if I can eliminate anything in the safety profession to improve it and to improve the safety and well-being of the workforce in the United States, it would be to eliminate politics from the conversation.
There's definitely a lot of politics lately, especially with the pandemic. So yeah, that's certainly a valid request. Yeah. Yep. Definitely. Tim, what do you think?
Well, I agree. There is politics involved at the higher level, but, you know, I think that if I had a magic wand, I there's a couple of things I would do. But, you know, I think the first thing would be to get everyone to the way that wand and make everyone see each other as human, first and foremost, before anything else. Remove color altogether. I think we are so distracted by the minuscule things in life that we forget that we all have one thing in common, and that is we all have families, we all have loved ones, we all have one life to live on this planet. And, you know, at the same time, we all want betterment of life. And so in order to maintain those things, we need to ensure that we protect each other as brother, sister, whomever. And so I think that if I had a magic wand, I would remove a lot of those biases and those programmings that we have been subjected to for so many decades that keep us from elevating to a higher level of consciousness, a higher level of humanism, so that we can establish, and this might be utopian of me, but I think that we are all capable of taking care of each other if we had the right motivations. And the right motivations seem to be obscured by, you know, someone else's personal agenda. And so I think that if I had a magic wand, I remove some of those barriers that keep us from seeing each other as brother, sister, human, what have you, and understand that we all require and need the same thing, and that is betterment of life, betterment of care, you know, just a betterment overall. And that comes through, you know, establishing safety policies, procedures that are going to be beneficial for life and not for an agenda.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's great. That brings to mind a conversation we had earlier today about how there's such a need for empathy and, you know, and compassion, so that we don't look at this as, you know, a matter of litigation and money and losses. We look at this as things that are affecting people and their lives. That's great. Great input. All right. Well, heck. So the last thing we always put out here is, in addition to everything we talk about, of course, I'd like to open up the floor if y'all have anything that you'd like to announce, any updates from Vice, anything going on that you'd like to bring out, anything you'd like to plug, or just any shout outs, anything at all. It's an open floor. Anything you want to do?
Well, first, Corey, before Crystal kind of speaks to some things that she has coming down the pipe as our fearless leader, I would like to thank you for reaching out to Vice to have this conversation. You and I didn't talk about it directly, but I know for a fact that you are a supporter of Vice, Blacks in Safety Excellence, and what we are trying to accomplish as an organization. So I just want to thank you for reaching out to us to have this conversation.
Certainly. I appreciate y'all's time and being here.
So Crystal, if you don't mind, I want to give a plug to the mentorship program.
Oh yeah, yes, certainly.
So I have recently been appointed as the mentorship program chair. So that's one big initiative, Corey, especially on my plate on Vice with that responsibility. So I'm going to be looking to grow a already robust mentorship program. Some things that you can look forward to down the pipe is Vice reaching out to local and national universities that have safety programs per se, to see if those young ladies and young men need mentorship. Don't have to be Black, don't have to be Hispanic. It's not about race. So we're going to start reaching out and broadening our program to mentor more. Unfortunately, I didn't have that mentor in my life and in my profession, I should say, until recently. So I don't want young professionals and students just getting out of college to face the same troubles that I did in getting to where I am today. Politics is one of them. I always talk about politics, but you have to understand the politics of life and the politics of organizations in order to move up. Sometimes it's not about how much you know. Sometimes it's about who you know. But sometimes it's about battles. Those are things that I had to learn on my own. But once I got a mentor in my life to guide me, those things just seem easy to deal with. I noticed improvements in my personal life by having a professional, a mentor in my profession. But I also noticed that opportunities were starting to become available in the workplace. And it wasn't that the opportunities were new, it was just that I was put in a better position in preparation for those opportunities. So mentorship is key, and that's one of the things that Vice is going to be focused on, especially me in my new role. So that's all I have.
Yes, and I'm thankful for Stephen in resuming the mentorship role with Vice, and I know he's going to do great things. And I think it's great that he's expanding it out, because I know for me, being in safety, you know, I haven't been in safety a ton of years, but I've learned a lot, especially with ASSP, and I've had different mentors with different backgrounds, different ethnicities, and they really helped me along my journey. So I think that's great. As far as upcoming events for Vice, we do have a webinar collaboration with the HCPS specialty group over new OSHA COVID-19 regulations, and that's going to be on October 28th now. I believe that's the new date. And then, of course, we have the leadership conference that's coming up October 21st through 22nd. And we do have a few of our BISE members like Crystal Turner Moffitt, Stephen Guillory, Omar Jackson, and then we have Kalea, who will be presenting. They do have a speaker session on preventing leader burnout and how to build a team that regenerates. So look out for those upcoming BISE events.
Well, that's fantastic. Yeah, a lot of great stuff going on. And that's really good that y'all have a mentorship program. That is fantastic. I know that, you know, a good majority of the emails that I get are around that, you know, with people that are looking to get into safety and they're trying to figure out, you know, how the machine works. So the more people that are willing to work with others and help them out, I think that's great. And it's, you know, it's always good for karma and good for, you know, human you know, empathy and all that good stuff, because at some point we were all starting, you know. So that's great of y'all. Anything else you'd like to add before we tie it up today?
I enjoyed the conversation, Corey.
Yes, thank you for having us.
Thank you, Corey. Appreciate your time. Thank you for having us.
Absolutely. I appreciate y'all being here. Y'all are doing great. And it's fantastic to see all the progress and everything going on. So as always, you know, if we can help with anything over at Healthcare, please feel free to let us know. We're always, always excited to collaborate. And for everybody else that's listening, you know, definitely check out BISE. They're doing a lot of great stuff. Get in touch with them. And for healthcare, you know, we got webinars coming up. We got October with BISE. We're going to be talking about COVID-19 ETS. And then in November, we'll be talking about fatigue management and burnout syndrome. Otherwise, the podcast is up to 24 episodes. So check us out at anchor.fm/ASSP-HCPS-HealthP. And otherwise, we'll talk to everybody on the communities and on LinkedIn and Twitter. Our Twitter is at ASSPHCPS. So with that being said, we hope everybody has a great day, and we'll talk to you real soon.